growing up, I was involved in different organizations in high school. Top Teens of America is one that comes to mind. It was a community service organization for high school age students. Then after I graduated high school and I went to college, I immediately became involved in student government, our campus NAACP chapter. And this is around 2004. I started college in 2003. So 2004 is when Barack Obama gave his DNC speech that put him on the path, and I finished college 2008, and that's when the campaign was well underway. And when I finished school, I said, I want to be a part of this. So I took a job as a field organizer on a congressional race, and I ended up in Northwest Louisiana. And once that race was over, I came back to Milwaukee and decided that this was something that I want to stick with. And I took an unpaid internship in Tom Barrett's office. And then I became the receptionist in his office. And this is 2009. And 3 years later, ended up running for state representative.
And you won that race, correct?
I did win that race.
So how did growing up in Milwaukee, how does that shape your politics and your beliefs?
I mean, I credit my upbringing to pretty much all of my political views. Knowing what the city of Milwaukee can be, knowing what we have the ability to produce, but also realizing the barriers that do exist. We have high levels of poverty. We have other issues that are impacted as a result of high rates of poverty, whether it's educational attainment, whether that plays out in community safety as well. But as a graduate of Milwaukee Public Schools, I know the difference between myself and, you know, some of my classmates who unfortunately took different paths, which is a story that is all too common in the city of Milwaukee. But knowing my upbringing, how that led me, you know, my dad named me Mandela in 1986. At this time, Nelson Mandela was still behind bars, but they took a very active role in my upbringing. So despite certain circumstances that may have surrounded me or that I may have been exposed to, I always knew that at the end of the day, I had to go back home. And my dad retired auto worker, and my mother, retired public school teacher. They just had certain expectations for me. But at the same time, realizing that that's actually, it's a luxury in many cases to have, you know, a two-parent household, to have, you know, two middle-income earners in one household, and knowing that that's just not the case for everybody. So that shapes my politics, and knowing that everybody just deserves opportunity. My story could have been anybody. Anybody else's story could have been me. So with that being said, I've always campaigned with opportunity in mind, establishing equity to make sure that regardless of, you know, where children are growing up, what their living condition is, what their situation is, they still deserve a chance. You don't choose what household you're born into.
One of the last times you and I had prolonged interaction was when you were running for the state Senate seat against Senator Lena Taylor. I want to know what you learned from that loss.
I learned a lot. I learned more when I lost than the first time I won. You get a chance to learn a lot about yourself. You get to do a lot of reflection. And honestly, you know, people ask, well, you know, was it right then after the race? People are like, was it worth it? And even then, I thought that it was worth it. But I don't think that I would have ended up running for lieutenant governor had I not lost that race. So sometimes, you know, winning isn't everything. And I think that I probably needed to lose.
You know, I left that wondering. I wonder if he's done with politics. Did you ever think you were done?
Oh, yeah. I thought I was done with a lot. it was a very long recovery. Like, don't get me wrong. Like, I didn't just go home and just wake up the next day and everything was okay. It was a process. It was truly a process. But after that race, I ended up having the opportunity to go work for a policy organization. Worked on a variety of issues across the country with different legislators, different progressive legislators who were pushing some really bold policy in their states. And so having the chance to have that experience, work with them, promote new ideas, promote a vision, and just new leadership across the country. It's like, all right, well, there are a lot of exciting things going on. I think that we should be doing that here in Wisconsin, whether it's, you know, investing in renewable energy, healthcare expansion, whatever the case may be, you know, raising the minimum wage. And I knew that this year would be unlike any other, especially, you know, with who's in the White House. I knew that there would be a certain energy around this election, and I thought that you know, even this time last year, that this is the chance that we can actually we can win. But it won't just happen. We'll have to lead with a vision. We'll have to talk about our ideas for Wisconsin. How do we take us from where we are to where we should be? And it was a thing where it's like, all right, well, you lost your last race, which was, you know, for the state senate. Well, how does running for lieutenant governor work? How do you expect to win that if you couldn't win a state senate race? But we had a plan, and I came back much stronger, you know, after losing that race.
So earlier you mentioned that you were inspired by President Obama. Who else inspires you? Who do you look to?
Well, yeah, I mean, definitely Barack Obama, but yeah, my namesake, just because, you know, growing up, you got to know everything about him growing up. So Nelson Mandela, certainly, for obvious reasons. I mean, those are probably the two key people that I look to.
And what about people that you can actually, like, touch, right? Like, who do you call up and say, I just really need to talk?
Yeah, so, well, now it would have been Vail Phillips. You know, I would call her. She was a night owl. Like, you had to call her after 11 p.m. if you want to talk to her. Seriously, and then you had to stay on the phone for 2 hours. I mean, that's something I definitely will miss. But it was great having a chance to just reach out and talk to her. And, you know, given that this is 40 years after her election, after her 1978 election to Secretary of State, and always, usually when I give a speech at certain places, I'll talk about asking her, what was it like as a black woman running for statewide office in Wisconsin in the late 70s? And that's when she told me, nobody knew I was black. And that's a story I will treasure forever, something I will keep with me forever, different day and time. Now, certainly, but you know, she said that she didn't have her picture on her literature, anything that went out. It just people wouldn't have put that together.
So, what was it like for you running for statewide office as an African American male?
Yeah, you certainly get challenges. You know, across the state, people, you know, ask, "How old are you?" The biggest question, and people are like, "Well, how you doing up north? How do you expect to relate to people up north?" I'm like, "Well, you know, like, when do they ever ask that question of other candidates when they come to Milwaukee? If they come to Milwaukee, how do you expect to relate to the city? How do you expect to relate to the younger voters that we need to carry the party or that can theoretically swing an election?" But you know, it's one of those things where you just have to know much more than your opponents. You have to be much more prepared than the other person on the ballot, because people will try their best to catch you up. And as a young person or as a person of color, a lot of times people may not think that you can relate. But when we started the campaign, when we brought up issues, and when they asked, what did we talk about when we got outside of Milwaukee? We talked about the same things we talked about in Milwaukee. And the stories are so similar. Everything is relative, whether it's education, whether it's healthcare, environmental concerns. People had the same interests. People had the same exact concerns. So I was able to talk about things most times in the same exact way, regardless of what part of the state I was in. So there were definitely hurdles, but I wasn't shocked. So it's different when you go in knowing that you should expect people to probably be a little more, be a little more stern in the approach, or maybe take a moment to kind of fill you out more than they would what we would consider traditional candidates.
How do you see your role as lieutenant governor?
Mm-hmm. As lieutenant governor, I want to be very supportive to Governor-elect Tony Evers' agenda. The same way it was with the campaign, we played off of each other. We were able to reach a lot more people than some tickets have been in the past, just because, you know, we are two very different people. Say that to say, we get along very well, and we understand our differences, and we know that helps it helped make us stronger as a ticket during the campaign. It'll definitely help make us stronger in governing, given those experiences. And I also want to make sure that we have a focus on equity and sustainability. And Governor-elect Evers understands that as well. We can't have any group of people in the state that are doing significantly worse when it comes to health outcomes, when it comes to income, when it comes to education. Like the disparities that we have are too stark for us to ever continue to move forward if things stay this way. So I want to focus on equity and sustainability issues, making sure that Wisconsin is a state that's prepared to go into the future, transforming our economy, you know, looking at where the opportunities are, especially in terms of renewable energy. And that fills a gap where we have so much loss, so much deindustrialization. I always share the story about my granddad, who moved to Milwaukee after World War II, worked at A.O. Smith, like so many other black men did, who moved north in Milwaukee. I mean, that was the place to, that's where the opportunities were, places like that. But my age group, opportunities are fewer there. You don't have that same shot at the middle class. You don't have that same opportunity to get ahead that you did even back in the late 1940s.
So, I mean, when you say equity and sustainability and talking about equity, what would be some of your ideas to level the playing field?
Yep. So I'll use education for as an example, because that is the overarching issue is what people look at when they see Wisconsin as the worst place, as that's consistently ranked as the worst place to raise a black family. The fact is, or we have some of the worst educational disparities in the entire country. But at the same time, we have the economic disparities that exist as well. And it's almost at an identical rate. And it's like nobody's ever just stopped to like intentionally look and see like, all right, well, we should probably do something about the economy or people's economic conditions, because, you know, that just may impact other outcomes, especially education outcomes. I mean, you have a rate of homelessness, one in 19 students in the city of Milwaukee that are homeless. It's very difficult to expect them to excel at a rate at the rate of their peers that don't deal with those same issues. People deal with food insecurity, access to health care. Those students, it's going to be reflected in their grades. It's going to be reflected in their educational outcomes. So we have to look at root causes, making sure, like you said, level playing field. We have to make sure other students are able to show up on level playing field. And that requires investments. And some of those investments in school, because you can't just throw money at a problem. I get that. Totally understand. But if you're able to hire more social workers in schools, more school nurses who can identify issues, and then are able to act as necessary where that student may have a shortcoming, may not have anything to do with their cognitive ability, but just everything to do with social factors, then you can begin to shift the paradigm in education. And once people are able to show what those needs met, you know, healthy students coming from higher income households who have that access to healthcare, typically their education outcomes reflect that.
Now, there are a lot of people watching you, right? You're young,
mm-hmm.
You're black, you're from the city of Milwaukee, and you are now in this this very important position. Are you ready?
I'm ready. Yeah. Ready when I started circulating nomination papers. You know, very, very aware of the gravity of it all, very aware of what it means, or what it would mean, what it could mean. So definitely ready, and knowing that eyes are on me. I look at it as a good thing too, because you got so many children growing up who've been told no. So many students who are growing up who have very few positive examples, positive role models, don't see themselves reflected in a lot of positivity. And sure, if all eyes on me, I mean, be under a microscope, but at the same time, that means that, you know, other people growing up who haven't had much, and you swap me out for anybody. Like, it's not about me at all, but like for people who haven't had the opportunity to see that kind of example or something that they could aspire to become, if they can see that, then I'm all for it.